Welcome to the quarterly audio series of North Group Consultants. We call this series Straightforward, and it's designed to provide you with direction for your future. In this edition, Roger welcomes his guest, William K. Poole, President and CEO of Hometown Heritage Bank. Roger and Bill will be discussing Bill's leadership journey. Now from North Group Consultants, here's Roger North.
I was having a conversation the other day with my colleague Dennis Klemmer. It was actually a consultation between the two of us about a couple of challenging consulting engagements we were working on together. And we kind of got to the point in the conversation where we looked at each other and said, you know, it always is about the leader. And when we say that, we don't mean that companies are or should be completely controlled by their leaders or that all ideas should come from their leaders, but we're generally engaged in the business of helping people improve, upgrade, take forward their cultures, the way in which an organization typically behaves. And I think that's the reason that we're mostly called into organizations is that they say, hey, we've got something good here, but we think we should have something even better. Help us figure out where we are and then walk alongside us as we go to a different place. My guest today is one of my great friends of all time, Bill Poole. Bill and I have been friends for going on 20 years and have walked through a couple different life challenges and journeys together. Bill, welcome. It's just fabulous to have you this morning.
Thank you, Roger. It's great to be here.
I opened with that thought as I was getting ready this morning. I was thinking, you know, who better to talk about it really is about the leader than Bill Poole? Bill, you and I have walked together through startup companies, you with me as we started up North & Johnson, now North Group Consultants, and I walking with you as you founded and started up Hometown Heritage Bank. And in your case, you did that with a very, very clear focus on building a culture in that organization. Can you talk a little bit, Bill, about what vision you started with from a behavioral, values-based, cultural standpoint when you started Hometown and how that played out over the course of the life of the institution?
Sure. Well, those are very kind comments, Roger, and I appreciate your friendship very much. You know, I think obviously building a company is about a journey. It's a process. I think from a leadership perspective, where I was really driven was to create a company that was focused strategically, but that individuals within the company clearly knew what we were all about.
Okay.
You've got to set up some core values. You've got to have a mission statement, and that's all great.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in the end, no matter who you're talking to in the company, we kind of talked about it as the party line is the party line, mm-hmm. whether you're talking to me or whether mm-hmm. you're talking to somebody at the mid-level or the lower level.
And isn't it great in an organization when you find out when you start dealing with that organization, as I did with yours, that there really is no gap between the party line, as you put it, what we say we're about, and our actual behavior. But that takes a real focus on the part of a leader to close the behavioral gaps that we often see in organizations. How did you go about doing that, and at what cost to you as a leader?
I think it came down to consistency. Mm-hmm. And I think as people heard me talk about the strategic plan, they often heard me talk about what we don't do.
Okay.
What our focus is as a company. Then that led into more the cultural dynamics that said, we're going to be about honor, excellence, integrity, servant leadership, and significance.
Okay.
And those things are going to be what we're about. We exist to serve the customer, reward the shareholder, and cherish the employee.
Mm.
I've just told you the story.
Mm-hmm.
That's something people can remember, but it's also something they can become passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted them to be able to put their print on what this company became.
Bill, those three things, I remember them from the beginning, and I think most any employee that has been with you could repeat back to us those three things. I think you said reward the stockholder.
It was serve the customer, reward the shareholder, and cherish the employee.
Thank you. Were there any points at which it seemed like you needed to create a priority there or that either of those things were, I don't want to say in conflict with each other, but you had to make some choices in those regards because those are the three major stakeholders in most any for-profit organization.
Sure. I think whether you look at our startup phase or the building and growth stage of the company or even the merger and sale of the company,
mm-hmm.
we consistently looked at those three things and said, as we're moving through these stages of our company, how are we measuring up with those three constituencies?
Mm-hmm.
I go to the last one first because a lot of people talk about their employees as their most valuable asset.
Right. Very common to read that in mission statements and value statements.
You bet.
Mm-hmm.
We chose the word cherish because we felt like that put an extra accountability to us as leaders to say, okay, what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. Even to the point of starting a new company, obviously you have limited resources and you maybe don't have all the people you have in a larger company.
Mm-hmm.
But we tried to make statements of valuing our individuals, things like if you're going to come to hometown and you've got a vast background and resume of work experience, mm-hmm. we're going to give you credit for all of that. You're not going to hit the ground running with us with 2 weeks vacation.
Yeah, okay.
You're going to get five
mm-hmm.
because we're interested in the balance within your life. And so every employee that came in heard as much about culturally that we cared just as much about the kind of husband, wife, father, mother, community leader they became on this journey, as well as banker.
Well, Bill, make a connection then for me, because obviously you're talking my language here,
mm-hmm.
but make a connection for me. You guys did have and still do have and are still creating outstanding results. The public scorecard. The public scorecard is very attractive to investors. It was rewarding to your charter investors. And yet, in creating that value, are you saying that you didn't require your employees to make significant sacrifices over against their personal life during that journey?
No, not really. I mean, I think what we asked them to do was really create a system of balance.
Okay.
Some people are better at that than others. Some people you've got to handhold through that process. Others, it becomes very natural and it's very enriching for them. But we do live in a scorecard environment.
Without question.
In fact, in the financial sector, when you think of Wall Street, it is, what have you done for me lately? Mm-hmm. It's quarter to quarter, return on equity, return on assets. We've kind of said, but it matters what kind of leader you become.
Mm.
It matters what you give back. It matters. We want people on our team who absolutely go ape when one of their coworkers gets promoted.
Mm.
They absolutely are thrilled with the fact that somebody has achieved something on the team that maybe shone the spotlight on them. And as a leader, you quickly realize that if it becomes all about me, then you're not impacting the organization in a way you can. Enter a room, and this is kind of the thing we talked about. You can either enter a room and say, what's in this for me, or it's all about me, or you can enter a room and say, who am I going to lift up today?
Yeah.
And it starts to really ingrain in the culture, and I often told people as I've had the opportunity to speak that amazing things have happened at hometown, and I've had no impact on that particular situation.
Right.
In fact, the best thing I did was get out of the way.
And aren't they the most rewarding, Bill, because it's the environment that you created. It's the expectations of behavioral integrity, the expectations of people building significance in their lives, not only in their employment life, but in their life overall. Building that culture then allowed those particular situations to take place without any particular input from you. Isn't that in many ways for a leader the most rewarding?
Absolutely. I had the opportunity to speak to about 20 to 30 CEOs not that long ago. And as we talked about the journey, and of course, they wanted to hear about the financial accomplishments.
Oh, sure.
So what I like about the financial accomplishments is it gives me the platform.
Absolutely.
To then talk about the things that I think really made the difference. But yes, maybe we became very profitable quickly. Maybe our shareholders ultimately were rewarded beyond what they ever expected. But what I talk about a lot is, when you look at the things that you've been able to impact, and somebody asked me in that actual meeting, what was a defining moment
mm-hmm.
in your journey? And I think I went a different way than they expected. And I said, you know, for me, it was at that time recently, I was sitting around my kitchen table with my two daughters who were home at the time. I had three daughters and my wife, and they were giving me some birthday gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And my oldest daughter away at college called in on speakerphone and wanted to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
She had given her mother a gift to give to me. And as I opened that gift, it was a book that said, Why Every Daughter Needs a Daddy.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, you look at that and you say, well, that's great. Well, I opened the book up, and there were 30 to 40 handwritten notes in there that mm-hmm. only Sarah and I share
mm-hmm.
that were moments that she wrote that impacted her life. That's what I told those CEOs.
Yeah.
That's what matters. That's why I do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And had many moments like that, whether it's the Christmas party we have at our house every year. There are three wives that none of them know that each of them did this, and their husbands don't know that they did this, but on three separate occasions, with tears in their eyes, have looked at me and said, you have no idea the man my husband has become working at this company. That's my return on
equity.
That's
your return.
Yeah.
But let me ask you this question, because people have got to be thinking this while we're talking here. You work in an industry banking, financial services, that is public with its results.
Correct.
You're now, that Hometown has been merged into National Penn, those results are there for everyone to see, not only the results overall, but the results of the bank that you run. And even more so in terms of expectations of a result, you accepted investments in Hometown beginning back in 1998.
Correct.
That people had no guarantee of any kind of return, and yet they provided you with capital to start that business and expected, and rightly so in my view, a return.
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying that the returns are all byproducts?
Obviously, you know my nature, Roger. I'm very competitive, mm-hmm. and I'm not going to sit here and say that I don't keep score. There was a huge accountability on my part to say there were 225 shareholders who believed in me and Hometown and various people involved in Hometown.
Absolutely.
I had the goal to really reward that,
mm-hmm.
and there was nothing like the feeling when that day came. However, it's the journey of how you got there, the things that we were not willing to compromise, the things that became the core of the company. That's what mattered. And you know this because you had an impact on this with some different books you've given me over time. But the most influential, way before I even started the bank, was the book Halftime, mm-hmm. written by Bob Buford. He's the guy that busted through my thick skull,
mm-hmm.
that kind of got through to said, you know, it's not just about success. It's about significance. And God gives everyone a platform. You're either going to use it or you're not. And so it was during that time frame that I decided, you know what, I'm not going to be any less driven. But I'm probably stubborn enough to say, I want both.
Mm-hmm.
I want the financial success along with the servant leadership, human reward, mm-hmm. of lives impacted, mm-hmm. and a difference made. And what's interesting along that is I grew. I grew a lot through that and became much more than what I ever could have had I not chosen that path.
Well, Bill, I don't know if this would be the case if you hadn't had the level of success at Hometown that you have, but you mentioned that book, and you and I have distributed a lot of copies of that book over the last,
yes, we have,
11 years. But I have an actual clear memory of you and I sitting in Friendly's restaurant in Lancaster in the summer of 1996,
yes,
over a copy of that book and saying, we both need to read and learn from this.
Yes.
It's going to speak to both of us. And within 2 years of that, we were younger men then.
Right.
We realized the significance of it in both of our lives and made changes and walked through life changes, vocational changes, as a result of believing that. The thing that I read in that book, which is different, I think, than the thing you read in that book that was most significant, was I read a phrase that said, figure out what you love to do and do it so well that other people pay you to do it.
Right.
And because you and I are wired very similarly, we're wired to competition. And I think for the most part, that's a good thing. Although we talked earlier today about how we have to be careful with that. What's your scoreboard idea? That made sense to me. And since then, we both had the privilege to walk a path that we've been blessed to walk that has given us a variety of rewards. But when I look back on those rewards, most of my rewards are similar to the types that you talked about.
Exactly. Well, I think, Roger, the interesting thing is everybody is given a platform. Doesn't matter what industry, it doesn't matter at what level within that industry. You're going to choose to use that in a manner that is more self-serving, or maybe it is more servant-like. You really can't become the leader and reach your highest potential until you really have learned to serve. And I've talked to people about that from the perspective of it is not a destination. It's mm-hmm. a journey that continues to evolve. We talked about it a lot culturally, that you've got to earn that every day. You wake up again, and there are certain things you can do that can actually destroy very quickly what you've built on.
Boy, isn't it easy to destroy it?
It really is. And I think you've got to be
able
to step up and let people know when you've messed up.
Yeah.
And then rebound from that.
And the other thing I find, this is a little bit of a riff on what you just said, but I find that people are very, very willing to forgive when we are transparent about the mistakes that we've made. And I think that is counter to what our society actually thinks is going to happen. They think that admitting a mistake or a personal weakness given into creates further weakness.
Yes.
I found as I've gotten older, and I'm still working at it because there's a certain amount of humility that doesn't come naturally to me, frankly, to admit a mistake. But I made one yesterday. Just yesterday, I made a bozo mistake. My kids think it's funny when I call it a bozo mistake. My daughter said to me one day, Daddy, what does it mean when you say that you're a bozo? Well, she doesn't remember Bozo the Clown when we were kids, but I use that term as something when I do something dumb or immature. And I did that just yesterday, and I was in a conversation with a friend who I just have the highest, highest regard for. We ended our time together early afternoon, and I drove back to my office, began to work on some things, and then it began to work on me. And it got me to the end of the day where I said, you know, I don't think I can lay my head on a pillow tonight till I call this friend and say, hey, I need to ask you to forgive me for that. And it wasn't necessarily something that was offensive to him. It was just an indication that my heart and my mind weren't in the right place.
I refer to that, Roger, as making yourself vulnerable.
Yeah.
It's very refreshing to people to know that someone in a leadership position is willing to not only admit when they could have done something different, but that they truly have made themselves vulnerable. And one of my creeds has been, I'm not going to miss an opportunity to tell people exactly what they mean to me.
Yeah.
And that's a very freeing opportunity to, I think, express to people who you are serving with in a company, but also with spouses, with children. It really forges, I think, a level of relationship that goes to a whole nother level.
Well, I need to tell you, Bill, that you made that exact statement to me about, I'm going to say, 3 or 4 years ago.
Is that right?
You said, Roger, I'm done with missing opportunities to tell people how much they mean in my life. And I think the place where it impacted me the most was in my relationship with my mom. My mom knows I love her. We spend time together and we do things that are meaningful to her. But when you said that to me and I realized she's my mom, she may not be here for the rest of my life.
Right.
I need to be more intentional about that.
I've heard you use that in some of your various discussions, Roger, about intentional. And I think when you're intentional and you think about all the people you come in contact with and you truly are walking into the room saying,
yeah,
who can I lift up today?
Yep.
It's amazing the ways you can find to do that.
Well, they're all around you, aren't they?
They really are. Earlier, you were talking about mistakes, and I did want to just mention one thing, Roger. You actually made a mistake once when you and I were playing golf, and you you were my partner, and you missed a 3-foot putt that I think cost me $5, but that's okay.
Hey, afterwards, we'll get that covered, my friend.
Okay.
There'll be many more missed 3-footers on my part. Hey, just talk a little bit, Bill. You founded, or were part of a founding group, I should say, of a group of investors back in 1998 of Hometown Heritage Bank. They asked you to come and be their president and CEO. You took that bank over a growth journey over several years and got to the point where it seemed to make sense to merge that bank into a larger organization. And I think that happened more quickly, probably than you expected. Certainly more quickly than your investors expected, or maybe anybody expected.
Right.
Why did you do that? And what did you go through personally in terms of challenges to make that happen?
It was an interesting journey. It was in many ways gut-wrenching. I always start back when people have asked me that question and say, we never started a bank. I was not the founding president of a bank to say we were a locally owned independent bank.
Mm-hmm.
It was back to that focus you and I talked about earlier.
Okay.
We were here to serve the customer, reward the shareholder, and cherish the employee. That had nothing to do with, in the end, how the ownership structure of the company was.
Okay.
As we continued to perform and knock the ball out of the park, a lot of people started approaching me. When the decision was made to actually sell the company, we were very, very deliberate in the boardroom about talking about, here's our mission statement.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to just reward the shareholder and now say we're going to quit serving the customer and we're not going to cherish our employee. I spent as much time negotiating the details of life after the merger as the actual price. I think a lot of times in our industry, that's where the time is spent. And while that was important, moving beyond that was even more important. And that's why it was unique in that no offices were closed. No employees lost their job.
Yep.
We had minimal transition of individuals, which does happen from time to time, but we actually hired more people. We've become their fastest growing division. We've actually impacted the culture with our, I'll call it brand within, because our brand is our people.
Mm-hmm.
We've grown to almost be a $500 million company. We never advertise. It's not about our name. It's not about our logo. It's not about a tagline. Our people carry the day. But I remember walking into that room and telling our employees, and there were some tears. There were some tears running down people's cheek because they had been through this before, and they knew what that meant.
Mm-hmm. Or they thought they knew what that
yeah,
meant.
Yeah, they did. And all I asked for was to be given a chance to say, this one's going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
And those same people who are here have come up and said, you know, you were right. and we've been able to even deliver more service at a faster growth rate for our customers, be able to actually handle larger transactions. And it's really become a unique journey. And actually, as good as the first 4 years was, the next four have been even better.
Well, Bill, that's a message of hope, I think, because what we see in corporate America is that mergers cost people things. Well, generally speaking, they can be rewarding to certain stockholders, often to executives within the merger, but they often cost ordinary people, people in the bowels of the corporations, their livelihoods, but perhaps more important, their belief systems, their belief in people that were their leaders. And so your story gives us a glimmer of hope that the type of thing, a merger, a corporate merger, which is what you participated
Absolutely.
In, doesn't have to be that way. What's the difference?
Ultimately, it was the accountability we set to ourselves that if they truly are our most valuable asset, we're going to treat them that
way. Speaking of your employees.
Absolutely. And I remember the first meeting we walked in to line up the benefits package.
Mm-hmm.
There were actually some shortfalls from what the larger company were not going to provide.
Okay.
We made everybody whole.
Okay.
Their health plan didn't cover what ours did. We made them whole.
Yeah.
Their vacation didn't matter. We made them whole.
But back to the word intentional that we both used a couple of minutes ago, you had to be intentional about those small items in the merger based on your belief in your calling to cherish the employee, right?
And correct.
That was actual intentionality that you could not lose sight of if you were going to make real in the lives of your people your commitment to cherish the employee.
And I didn't apologize, Roger, for the company we had become. And I sat down with the individuals, and there were a few companies, but when it was narrowed down to the one that I was doing a negotiated transaction with, I said, look, you need to understand who we are
right.
and who I am.
Right.
Here's what matters to us.
And that was first. That was
yeah.
foundational.
Absolutely.
Not the financial
no,
piece.
They heard about servant leadership. They heard about all these things. So when they evaluated and came back and said, we'll pay this huge premium if
mm-hmm.
you'll stay and run it, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I'll stay and run it on two conditions. You can't change the name and you can't touch one hair on one employee's head.
Mm-hmm.
And we embarked on this journey and they heard the story. They heard the stories we've talked about today and many more as to what really mattered. You know, a lot of people have said, well, Bill, you know, you've had this cloak over this inference to faith and how the impact of the company, and I've heard you pray at board meetings, you maybe prayed at executive leadership meetings within the company, you started your shareholder meetings with a prayer.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't make us any different than anybody else. The accountability was there, and we had to earn some of the things that were important, but there was an overlay of ultimately what mattered. And I think the company even purchasing us knew this,
mm-hmm.
and when it was all said and done, they realized that's exactly the kind of company we want.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a testament to them realizing, and it's been a good partnership.
It's not about the prayer. It's about the beliefs and the accountability that underlies that, because you and I have been in places where those types of things have taken place.
It's a ritual.
But the delivery system was not there.
Right.
Bill, you've referred in a number of times already in our conversation here today about the concept of servant leadership. And I think by now, just about all of us have heard that terminology. And yet, it seems elusive to most of us as to what it actually means. What's your take on servant leadership? Let me correct myself. Not what's your take. What's been your experience as a servant leader?
You know, I think for me, it's back to the gratification that comes from seeing others succeed, put their own print on things. And I, as a leader, have maybe had an influence in who they became as not only a professional, but as a husband or a father. Many times, and you find this with very driven people, is they're very good at one thing and then the rest of their life is very dysfunctional.
Yes.
Right?
We see that too often, don't we?
And when you learn to balance all that and understand that ultimately you truly hear that as a leader, the best way to do that is to serve and to shine the light on others and to really, I call it, find a way to catch people doing something good, lift them up. There are two things people really want, Roger, and that's praise and appreciation.
Yeah, without question.
And if you go through life and you really deliver that to people.
In a genuine way.
Exactly. It can't be forced, and it's like, you know, every time I experience something with somebody, I'm going to follow with a note card.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how I'm built. I want to try and figure out a way of what makes Roger North tick.
Right.
And then I'm going to do something special that relates specifically to you. As a leader, you find those ways you truly connect, and the ability to create passion, that people are stakeholders, that people have a vested interest, that people truly know, hey, I'm vested because I had an impact on what this became. I get to tell the story, and I'm not that smart a guy. I've had great people around me who've helped me take something, and even to this day, to be a small group of people that are a high-performing team has been a testament to me that it's about the people and the culture. It really becomes part of your DNA. It's kind of who you are.
And we could probably boil down in this conversation the servant leadership concept to what you said two or three times today is, who can I lift up today?
Right.
And I think if we would all enter our days with that intentionality, perhaps we won't always deliver. Certainly you and I don't always.
No.
But if we would enter each day with the question on our mind, who can I lift up today? The workplace that you and I impact every day, that our listeners impact every day, can truly become a place where lives are fulfilled. I believe that about workplaces. We believe that passionately, that workplaces do not have to be places where people's energy is diminished and they return to their homes, to their communities, to their families as a diminished person, but rather workplaces can be. It takes work, it takes intentionality, it takes commitment, but workplaces can be uplifting places that return more whole, more energized, more committed people to their families, to their homes, and to their communities. And you've been a great example of that. Bill, thanks for taking time to be with us today on Straightforward. It's just a pleasure to have you.
Thanks, Roger. Great to be here.
I look forward to our continuing journey together. Have a great day, everybody.
North Group Consultants continues to provide direction for your future through sustained relationships. We identify issues by conducting assessments, provide assistance during organizational transitions, and develop leaders through coaching and accountability. As always, thank you for listening to Straightforward.